Good morning. We'll call the Board of Supervisors meeting to order. If everybody please rise to the flag salute.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
We have a couple presentations this morning. We'll start with May 2007, Mental Health Month in Stanislaus County.
Good morning. Denise Hunt, Behavioral Health Director. This board has proclaimed May 2007 as Mental Health Month. This very much supports the board's priority of a healthy community. Since 1949, designating May as Mental Health Month has served as an awareness effort to dispel misconceptions about mental illness, to gain equal treatment for people with mental illness, and to celebrate good mental health as one of the elements necessary to a healthy community. More than one out of every five individuals experience a diagnosable mental illness, either personally or through a family member. And this is regardless of race, age, creed, sex, or socioeconomic status. Mental disorders are as disabling as cancer or heart disease in terms of premature death and lost productivity, and as such should be the concern of a community focused on health and wellness. The terrible truth is that a full two-thirds of people who suffer from a mental illness never even seek help due to stigma, fear of discrimination, or a lack of knowledge associated with what mental illness is all about and how it can be treated. The good news is that 80 to 90% of mental disorders are treatable using medication and other therapies. Support from family, friends, and community contributes to wellness and recovery from mental illness. The stigma associated with having a mental illness is a big barrier to recovery. If we want to be a truly healthy community, we need to break down the stigma and treat mental illness like any other healthcare condition. That starts with me, with you, and with all of us. One of the most important things to remember about mental illness is this: people can and do recover. If those of us here today, or those of us listening, have a friend or a family member with mental illness, or if you have a mental illness yourself, remember, recovery is possible. People with a mental illness can recover or manage their conditions and go on to lead happy and productive lives. They contribute to society, to their families, and they make the world a better place. People can often benefit from medication, rehabilitation, psychotherapy, group therapy, self-help, or a combination of these. And one of the most important factors in recovery is the understanding and acceptance of family and friends. So behavioral health and recovery services, along with all the other community providers of mental health care, are grateful to the board for proclaiming May 2007 as Mental Health Month in Stanislaus County. Thank you for that. Here with me this morning are Joyce Pliss of NAMI, the National Alliance on Mental Illness, which is a family-focused organization, and Jim Hurley, who is an employee of our department and who's very involved in spreading information about recovery and wellness throughout our community. They'll be accepting the resolution from the board this morning. Thank you.
Mental health is a very serious issue in every community, including Stanislaus County. Very happy and proud that Denise Hunt is in charge of that department. She does a great job. The Board of Supervisors has proclaimed May 2007 as Mental Health Month here in Stanislaus County. I want to thank each of you for everything you do and all the time you put in. And I'd like to ask if you'd like to say a couple words.
Just on behalf of the Wellness Recovery Center and our Transition to Young Adult programs that serve youth, and all the children's programs, we want to thank the board very much. As Denise said, one of the biggest barriers to people getting well and moving on their lives is stigma. And I really appreciate the board acknowledging Mental Health Month because it lets people know that you have a treatable condition and it is something you can recover from. So thank you.
I want to thank you on behalf of family members. I'm with the National Alliance for Mental Illness. And on Thursday, May 24th, we're having Schizophrenia Awareness Day, and I'd like to invite anyone who is interested to attend our Schizophrenia Awareness Day. It'll be at 800 Scenic. It'll be from 11:30 until 2:30, and we'll be showing the movie Out of the Shadow. Thank you.
Thank you very much. We have a second presentation this morning from the Airport Advisory Committee for the 2006 Annual Report.
Good morning, gentlemen. I'm Bill Jakes with the representing the Airport Advisory Committee. I believe that all of you should have received a packet from the airport prior to this. And one small correction. Airport Appreciation Day is this Saturday. It's May 12th. And we would encourage everyone to attend if at all possible. There are generally some nice airplanes that fly in from out of the area. Last year we had an ME-109, which is one of the few flying ME-109s in. The commemorative Air Force generally has a B-17. John Ward brings his B-25, and it's quite interesting. And it is to perpetuate the use of the general aviation side of the airport. We're doing a couple of nice things with the help of Supervisor DeMartini and now Dick Monteith. We have some money coming from airplane taxes, and we are in the process. The city staff is working on the final design. Hopefully in July or August, we will be breaking ground for a row of new hangars at the airport. We're building 11 hangars. Hopefully, when we finish this project, our goal is to build another 11. We have an ongoing waiting list of 6 to 8 people waiting for hangars, and our hope is to bring airplanes from other airports. Oakdale, Livermore has a huge waiting list, and we think that we can entice those people to come as well. You know, this will bring tax money and action and more interest in the airport. We are also paving our existing parking lot just east of the terminal, and that will be paved on toward the tower building, which we're using to encourage, you know, our newly arrived L.A. Traffic, which is a nice thing. We haven't had L.A. traffic since 1994, and everybody's pretty excited about that. Those are things near and beyond the second row of hangars. We're looking at possibly drilling our own well to irrigate the lawns and the foliage around the airport to take the load off of city water that we're currently using, doing a couple things, feeding the plants untreated water, and take the burden off the city system. Those are things near, and are there any questions?
Any questions? Well, thank you for everything you do. Thank you for the report today, and keep up the good job. Okay, that was just a presentation, no action needed. We'll move on to public comment period. This is a time and agenda where anybody can address the board on any item that is not on the agenda. I do have two specific requests today, and we'll start with Ellen Zanker. That's fine.
Good morning. My name is Bob Varane, and I live at 167 Brescia Circle in LaGrange. According to Mr. Krasnick, in his letter dated March 2, 2007, the county's responsibility with regard to CID is limited to overseeing the public drinking water system that supplies water to LaGrange. My question is, why have Stanislaus County DER and Mr. Krasnick covered up the following facts? One, the system has been out of compliance with state and safety code minimums for over 10 years. Over and over, annual consumer confidence reports have been sent to the residents of LaGrange, lying to the LaGrange residents, indicating none under the heading of summary violations, which is a section required by the Code of Federal Regulations, section 141.153. And two, why did Stanislaus County DER not notify the residents of LaGrange and the fire department that their fire hydrant system was disconnected? This is only two examples of the many cover-ups perpetrated by Sonia Herrenfeld and Mr. Krasnick, which in my opinion borders on criminal conduct. Wouldn't it be much more productive for the county to spend its resources on investigating the many TID and DER miserable failures to protect the citizens of LaGrange, rather than having county council sending out threatening letters to taxpayers in an attempt to scare them off from bringing these ongoing failures to your attention? Thank you very much.
Thank you. Mr. Zenker?
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, members of the board. I'm Alan Zenker from LaGrange. I'm here to respond to Mr. Krasnick's letter of April, his most recent letter to me, and I've got a copy of that, and I'd like to provide a copy to each of the board members and discuss that and the related issues. So I'm here to respond to this letter from Mr. Krasnick to me, in which he had CC'd the Board of Supervisors. And in this letter, he had asserted that I was making untrue statements and went into great detail and great length admonishing me for asking for documents that the county should have. I've highlighted the important passages in yellow. Again, I've been asking for a pressure recorder data from the 2001-2002 period. Mr. Krasnick says the county does not have such documents. The letter that I've marked as number two is the letter from the county to TID in 2001, please install pressure recorders due to the failures of the pressure system and complaints from 1999, 2000, and 2001. The document labeled number three, if you look at the top of the second page, essentially the TID was acknowledging that DER had directed TID to install the pressure recorders, notice plural, and that they would go ahead and install this. Again, that was in 2001. There was a fire in LaGrange in 2002, and TID publicly stated that the system worked as planned. The firemen never ran out of water. This can't be true. If the system worked as planned, there would be two functioning pressure recorders on the system. So Mr. Krasnick's letter to me states that he has reviewed the county files, so he should know all this. If you look at the fourth document I've provided, this is a letter from the Stanislaus County employee to our director of Department of Environmental Resources, Sonia Herrenfeld. This was a year after the fire, and I read, Alan Zenker called today and asked if I would ask TID if the pressure recorder they returned to me was the one they had previously installed on a fire hydrant. I advised him I'd have to check with you first. I was not sure this is something we would want to do or that Alan Zenker could do, since he may be interested in specific dates and time the pressure recorder may have been in use. That's a year after the fire. I'm a resident of LaGrange. This is a response to complaints of pressure failures in as early as 1999. And Mr. Krasnick lambasted me for asking for this data that was county property, county recorders, with numerous county hours spent on seeking this information. It's amazing. It's absolutely amazing. In order to believe Mr. Krosnick that there are no pressure recorders, that means that two county staff members had to give seven TID personnel two pieces of junk to monitor the complaints, which would be violations of the Safe Drinking Water Act. In a previous letter to me, Mr. Krosnick states that the county was fully and accurately responded to my numerous public record requests. Please be aware that the county's responsibility with regard to TID is limited to overseeing the public drinking water system that supplies water to LaGrange. In addition, the county has a responsibility to the taxpayers of Stanislaus County to utilize staff time and resources in the most efficient manner possible. I've been here before numerous times. Other members of LaGrange have been here before. We've met with DER, we have met with County Council, and the system still threatens the health and safety of the LaGrange residents. So I'm sure the supervisors have it on the tip of their tongue to ask, what can the supervisors do to help their constituents and get this fixed? First of all, they have to get the facts. The cover-up of the county data, even if there aren't any pressure recorders, no data, why? Years after this problem, there hasn't really been an investigation by the county why and how. Who fixed the pressure recorders? Because supposedly they were fixed. They were working when I went to the county in 2003 and checked. Okay. So I would suggest that we actually set up some public meetings with the fire department, TID, LaGrange residents, and even the sheriff's department to discuss, gather the facts, quickly be done with this. The goal should be to bring the system into compliance with both the fire code and the state health and safety codes, especially pertaining to drinking water. And I really think we should remove anyone who's opposed to this process. If you have any questions, I'd be happy to answer the questions. But I do disagree strongly with Mr. Krosnick's assertions that I'm making untrue statements. Thank you.
Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, members of the board, I'd like to briefly respond to Mr. Zanker and Mr. Green's statements. Sonny Herrenfeld may also wish to provide some response. You will recall that on March 20th, Mr. Zanker addressed the Board of Supervisors during the public comment period. And in that statement, Mr. Zanker requested that the county provide, and he again is requesting that we provide pressure reports for a period of August 2001 and August 2002. Mr. Zanker has previously asked county staff for these records. Mr. Zanker has been told on repeated occasions, not only by county staff, but by members of the state, that those records do not exist. I don't know how much clearer staff can be. There are pressure records beginning on July 7, 2003 to present, and Mr. Zanker has been provided those records. So when Mr. Zanker came to the board, he was aware that the records didn't exist, and he asked the board to have staff providing those records, and he went so far as providing, he threw some cash, I think it was $6.20, on the podium. In my letter to Mr. Zanker, dated April 20th, which I provided board members copies of that, I advised Mr. Zanker that we were returning the $6.20, that we don't have those pressure recorder documents for 2001-2002, and that Mr. Zanker was advised, and I attached in my letter to him two copies documents, actually three documents, that clearly showed, and some, most of those are a year or 2 years old, and Mr. Zanker was advised that we just don't have those records. So there is no cover-up. There is no action that is inappropriate. Mr. Zanker is asking for records that he knows we don't have. These are records, again, that date back to 2001, 2002. Mr. Zanker has been repeatedly told by staff that most of his issues, and I think he's outlined that pretty clearly today, are with TID. And in fact, Mr. Zanker entered into litigation with TID. And in a reported decision, Mr. Zanker lost most of the points and was actually ordered to pay cost on that action. So I'm not sure what county staff can do, and I don't know if Sonia needs to add any additional comments to that, but we have provided all the records that Mr. Zanker has requested that the county has. We just don't have those records, Mr. Zanker. I don't know how much more clear I can make that.
Good morning, Sonia Herzfeld, Director of Environmental Resources. As to the 2001 records, the Department of Environmental Resources, does not have any pressure recorder records for those times requested. Mr. Zanker has requested those numerous. We've gone through our files multiple times. Yes, the department did direct TID to install a pressure recorder device through multiple, and the department did loan TID a pressure recorder to be installed. That pressure recorder did end up being not working to TID's satisfaction. TID did return that pressure recorder device for us. During all this time, there was a transition to where I became responsible for that. The Department of Environmental Resources purchased a pressure recorder device, installed it ourselves. We now, on a weekly basis, change the pressure recorder, the record that tracks it. We compare our record to TID, which now has a functioning, and at that time, I think they installed theirs a little bit prior to when we installed ours in 2003. We've been tracking the pressure on the system since then. We have all of those documents. Mr. Zanker has all of those documents, but we do not have any documents from that period of time that Mr. Zanker has requested. And if you have any questions of me, I'd be happy to answer them.
So, you know, during this time, these records do exist now. Are they meeting the state standard now?
Yes, they are. And what's interesting is that we are not required to have a pressure recorder device on a system. We have done that at the county, at the department's expense. That is not a requirement of small water systems, is to have a continuous pressure recorder device on the system. The reason why we installed it on the system was because of the complaints that we'd had about the pressure in relation to the LaGrange system.
Okay, now the other part was the fire department. That is under Consolidated Fire, if I remember right.
Yes, that's correct. Okay. The fire pressure and the testing of the hydrants is the responsibility of Stanislaus Consolidated Fire Protection District.
Okay, now does it meet the specification it's supposed to meet for fire protection?
I can't answer that question.
Well, wait a minute now. Okay, but who could answer that question? Who could answer whether it meets the requirements? I mean, this is something that the Consolidated Fire, what they're doing is they're collecting the taxes or the fees for protection, but if you're saying now that they can't justify their fees because of the fact they can't, but why don't they answer it? Now I have to ask council. Can at some point the fire department responsible for LaGrange, shouldn't they be required to answer these charges?
Well, I think that Mr. Zanker's question and your question could be answered by Consolidated and would be addressed to that. They are a separate independent body,
okay,
and they should be able to answer it. I'm sure Mr. Zanker, who is a former member of the Consolidated Board for many, many years, will probably have no problem going back to that board and addressing that question to that board, which is the proper jurisdiction and agency to respond.
I understand that. If they don't get the answers, if nobody can answer it, what is their course of events? Rather than coming to the board and complain about what we're not doing, then at some point, who takes responsibility if they're not meeting the requirement they're supposed to meet.
Let's see if I understand your question. If there is some agency that is required under law with certain responsibilities, if that agency is not performing responsibilities, then a party who doesn't believe they're meeting that can always take action, legal action, as Mr. Zanker took a legal action against TID. So there is that avenue available. I guess Mr. Zanker could, if he didn't feel Consolidated was performing their operations, that he could maybe take an action against Consolidation.
Okay. That's where you need to go. You need to go to Consolidation. Pardon me? Wait a minute. I can't hear you. Come to the podium. This is in my jurisdiction, so no. If they're not meeting their requirements and their responsibility, then why aren't you talking to them rather than talking to us?
Okay, well, first of all, I have brought the issue to the Consolidated Board's attention years ago. The Consolidated Legal Counsel sent a notice of compliance to TID. The county also has a copy of that letter. Now, the fire department doesn't actually have jurisdiction or the responsibility to provide the water to LaGrange. TID has that requirement. The county is the administrator, supposedly, of the state grant that TID received in 1985 that was to install new water mains at that time and install a pressure booster pump and install fire hydrants. So the county has a very direct responsibility to make sure that the state funds that got passed through the county were spent for a legitimate purpose, such as the water lines in the town and the hydrants. Since that time, TID has disconnected the supply, the main supply, from the hydrants. So,
but isn't this between the Grays and the TID, since they provide all the water? Okay, and
it is primarily that issue.
But wait a minute, didn't you go to court? Didn't you go to court on this? Okay, and you had a court case on this,
yeah.
TID and LaGrange. Okay, well, what was the outcome?
Okay, first of all, the primary issue is the lawsuit was initiated against myself, not, as Mr. Krosnick said, I did not initiate the suit against TID. TID sued after some residents went to Mr. Monteith years ago asking about the problems, to look into the problems with the LaGrange water system. This suit was over the boundary, alleging that TID had drawn the boundary between my pool and my house for the domestic water system. I prevailed on that issue the whole time the county was ducking out of the litigation because the odd circumstances of LaGrange Firehouse on county property is outside of the boundary that TID asserted, as is the U.S. Post Office.
Was this the court case?
That was the court case.
That was the court case just between you and TID.
Between myself and TID.
Okay, so you didn't have a court case on the...
That expanded into declaratory relief as the TID asserted jurisdictional boundaries over the LaGrange water supply. And only until recently, in 2006, had the TID board member, the TID board member admitted that they don't have jurisdiction over LaGrange. We and LaGrange are not in the boundary of TID. We can't vote for the directors. We can't recall them. We can't be one. It's a contract. And through a manipulated process, the TID has broken that contract.
Wait a minute, but if I go back a little ways now,
yeah,
Alan, okay, I'm not that old, but when this thing all started, TID was supposed to supply LaGrange with water.
Yes.
Oh, that was the original contract at the very beginning.
Yes.
Okay, now, when you went to court, did they say that TID had, did the court agree with TID, or did they agree with LaGrange? I mean, we just need to know because
yeah.
I know you're frustrated, but so are we when this continually comes up, who's responsibility, who's for the fire, who's for the water, who's for this, who's for the monitoring. Well, everything now, all these questions are out there.
It was a 44-page decision, so I won't pardon the...
No, let's not afford that. Just tell me yes or no. Who won?
both sides one part. But the TID is obligated to provide the town of LaGrange with water. Interestingly, one of the issues that the judgment stated was that the fire system worked okay on that day of that fire.
So what was on there then?
There was a prevail by TID on that issue. Well, if the county would have had its pressure recorders, county equipment on the system in response to complaints of pressure, the court judgment would have been different on that primary issue.
Okay, so but the court was misled. But what they're telling up here is that the county doesn't have the recordings for the time that I think you're, are you talking about?
Yeah.
They don't have it. Okay, if they say they don't have the recordings, how are we going to do that? How are we going to take care of that problem?
Okay, well, first of all, there were some recordings taken by a licensed treatment water treatment plant operator at that time of the fire, which showed that the system failed. Now, every time that the fire system fails, so does the domestic system, and vice versa. So if the county is overseeing a public water system that is attached to a fire system that is out of compliance, it doesn't have enough water to supply hydrants, then the domestic water system has to be out of compliance. It can't meet the minimum standards by definition.
But so the TID doesn't, the TID, it wasn't it their responsibility to take care of that system?
Yes.
It's their responsibility. If it's the TID's responsibility, why are you here?
Because of the issue of the county's responsibility, as Mr. Krosnick clearly states, that the county is supposed to oversee the public water system of LaGrange. If a fire occurs and the hydrants are used, the pressure in the system is likely to go well below 20 pounds per square inch. That is the state requirement that must be maintained. That can and it will happen. It's when there's another fire in LaGrange, it will happen. When the pressure goes below 20 pounds per square inch, there are threats to the community water system for contamination of backflows, etc. So there's a multi-part series of issues here.
Okay, but now you're going back. You're going back to the recordings. The county says we don't have. I'm not trying to debate this with you.
Okay,
they say they don't have them.
Right now,
in the last since that time, you have all the recordings, Sonia? I mean, from that time, do you have the recordings? We can't go back and solve a fire that we don't have the recordings. But if from that point on, do you have the recordings? That if something happens tomorrow or the next day, will you have the recordings that the system dropped down below where it was supposed to be?
Yes. Since we installed the pressure recorder device in 2003, we have all of the recordings, with the exception of the time that we take the recorder off to send it back to the company to have it calibrated.
Well, how long is that?
It's usually gone 2 weeks, 2 to 3 weeks.
Okay. Now, how much do these recorders cost?
I believe we paid roughly $500 for it.
You mean to say that the time when that recorder is gone, that this county couldn't have two recorders so that when one is gone to be read, that the other one couldn't be sitting there?
Yes, I can purchase a second recorder.
Okay, and so if you had two recorders, when one of them's gone and they're taking the data off of it, if we had another one sitting right there, okay, so you would have a complete chart of everything that goes on, whether that one's gone or whether it's here. Wouldn't
that's true. So
is that what you want?
No, see, that's like using the analogy that you're putting two flight data recorders on an airplane that doesn't have a wing.
Let's don't compare this to an airplane. Okay, let's talk about the water system. If you had two recorders, okay, and one of them was gone, and you put another one in there, you could be recording that water system. If something was to happen at that point, then you would have a complete recording whether the system was low or high. Then you'd have something to go back to TID about, and then you could be talking to the fire department who takes care of LaGrange. They get your money. I mean, if you're getting cash for it, then why at some point don't they step up to the plate and say, okay, you have protection or you don't have protection?
They, to the best of my knowledge, are working on doing pressure tests of the hydrants and flow tests. They're waiting for the gauges to be repaired.
Alan, you were on that board for years.
Yes.
Okay. Now, there's no reason why you couldn't go to that board and say, okay, give us your results. How long?
Okay.
I'm running out here.
We have the results. We presented that to this board before. The tests of, I think it was late in 2002 to 2003, it showed that the system failed. Every time the fire marshal checked it over the course of a 3 or 4 month period, the county has that information. That is a legitimate pressure record by, you know, a certified fire marshal. I think that would be, it's more legitimate than any pressure recording data that the county has during that period. And, you know, above the county is the State Department of Health Services. I ask them, you know, what data do you have on the failures of the system? What data do you have on non-compliance? I got a response from the DHS state representative that they had no records of system failures for that time period, or even any idea that the system was out of compliance.
Well, I don't know where this is going. I don't know where this is going to go, Alan.
That's the county's duty, is to...
It's the county's duty to
report to the state.
Okay, do you report to the state, Sonia?
We oversee all the small water systems jointly with the Department of Health Services. We have had the Department of Health Services down to review TIDs, to review the LaGrange water system. I believe that Gene Reed, you and I met on several occasions to discuss the water system and the state's view on whether the water system was in compliance or not. Am I correct on that?
I believe we've met, yes.
Yes, we have met. And the state, I believe, also sent you a letter in 2005, is that correct, stating that they had no issues, Department of Health Services, that was from their engineer, who oversees the small water system, saying that the system was in compliance?
I don't recall the exact statement that the system was in compliance.
Do you have a letter?
Yes, I do.
I have a lot of letters.
Okay, wait. She's got the letters.
She's saying that it's true.
Wait, if she's got the letters, they responded to you, okay, what more can we do to prove that they're doing what they said they're doing?
May I just make a statement? We have worked hand-in-hand with the Department of Health Services in overseeing the LaGrange water system. We have had them down. They have reviewed our records. They believe that that we, the Department of Environmental Resources, have been implementing the regulations as specified by the Department of Health Services, and they are satisfied with our compliance issues and how we've been dealing with them with TID. Gene Reed and the engineers from the Department of Health Services are very well aware of the situation with LaGrange, and we have done everything that they have asked. They oversee us. The system currently is in compliance. I don't know what else to say.
Could I just give one example?
I don't know that we're going to get anywhere today. Maybe a meeting can be set up or something. I don't know what we're going to accomplish today.
In a quick response to Ms. Herridgefeld's assertion that the county is doing what they're supposed to, in 2003, John Odd, County DER, sent the TID assistant general manager notice, quote, this letter is to advise the TID that the LaGrange water system and treatment plant has been found to be in violation of state laws and regulations. And this letter went on to highlight that it had been so since 1995. Well, for the same period, the LaGrange residents received the consumer confidence report, which TID is supposed to put out and the county is supposed to oversee. And I quote, the summary information for contaminants exceeding MCL or AL or a violation of any treatment or monitoring and reporting requirement. And the TID's response is none. Thank you for your time.
We hope we have a meeting this morning. We're not going to accomplish, so I think we're done at this point. I would suggest that maybe interested parties can get together and discuss this further.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, thank you. Are there any other members of the public wishing to speak under public comment from the floor? Please state your name.
My name is Deepak Paul Singh. I was in the news board a couple of weeks ago. And I don't know, I just know by code enforcement that I had a meeting with on the site, 9 o'clock, that I have to be here. It's 1345 Carpenter Road. I just called him yesterday to make appointment to come and check the property.
Okay, this is item B4. We'll get to you in just 1 minute, sir.
Thank you, sir.
Are there any other members of the public wishing to speak on a public comment from the floor? We'll move to consent calendar. It sounds like we'll have some discussion on item B4. So let us, are there any other items people wish to discuss? I have a motion to adopt consent calendar left item B4.
Also moved.
Second. I have a motion and a second.
Chairman, if we could, excuse me, we could pull A5. That matter will be brought back next week. A5.
Okay. Can I have that motion amended to pull item A5 as well as B4?
I'll amend that motion then.
Okay. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Passes 5-0. Item A5 is pulled. We will go to the 9:20 public hearing, then we'll come back to item B4. We are past the time of 9:20. The public hearing to consider approval to introduce and waive the first reading of the ordinance to adopt San Luis County Fire Prevention Bureau amended fee schedule. Mr. Henshaw.
Good morning, Chairman O'Brien, members of the board, Mr. Robinson, Mr. Krosnick, Gary Henshaw, your fire warden, Office of Emergency Services. As I begin my presentation, I'd like to introduce the team that participated in developing this study for fees. The team members in the audience are Deputy Fire Warden Ray Jackson, Mimi DeSimone, our Finance Admin Manager, Doug Hennick, retired Modesto Fire Chief, Ken Slayman, our Fire Marshal, and with us from Maximus Consultant is Dan Yates. The project background, as you recall, back in June 11th of 2006, the Stanislaus County Fire Authority recommended to this board that the Fire Warden's Office begin providing the fire prevention services in Stanislaus County and then incorporated area. On June 13th, 2006, this board adopted those recommendations, and we began delivering those services on July 1st of 06. Among our first priorities were to determine and conduct a fee study to determine appropriate fee structures. The last time that the fees were updated in this particular area was 1992-1993. The study was funded by the Stanislaus County Fire Authority with $20,000, and it was their recommendation and motion to hire Maximus Incorporated. They're a consulting firm that's recognized statewide for establishing true costs of providing government services. And Mr. Ed is in the audience if we have questions about our methodology. Some of our project objectives on the next page is trying to determine what the full cost of providing fire prevention services. As we took a look at those, the fees that we recover for new development activities such as plan check and inspections, we only recovered about 20% of the cost of providing those services. We looked at our contract budget for 2006-2007. The total that was contracted to the fire prevention services was $525,000. That breaks down $125,000 from the Lessing Countywide Fire Service fees, $300,000 County General Fund, and approximately $100,000 in existing fees. Other services that are provided that are not covered, that are covered through the General Fund, would be our mandated inspection, complaint-driven inspections, pre-application process, our environmental review process. And interestingly enough, we have several plans that are submitted that we reviewed that are never picked up. So we put a lot of work into those efforts, and they're left on the shelf. Some of our additional objectives were to establish and adjust fees where applicable. We wanted to be consistent with county general plans that new development pay for the services provided. And we looked at San Joaquin County and Modesto as jurisdictions to compare with. If these fees are adopted, the fees would be, in most areas, equal to or significantly less than the surrounding jurisdictions that we compared to. Our calculation methodologies two basic means of calculating cost of providing services. One is based on valuation of project. The second one is based on recovery of direct and indirect costs. That's the time it takes to put an inspector in the field, do plan reviews, research, and provide the services. We think that most accurately reflects the cost of providing services. We took the study back to the Stanislaus County Fire Authority. They reviewed and accepted it. We've met with the city representatives from the city of Houston, Waterford, and Riverbank, and they are very supportive of this particular fee structure, and they asked that we would assist them in adopting it at their local level within the next 30 to 45 days. We have met with the Stanislaus County Fire Farm Bureau and the Executive Board, and we have sent letters and telephone follow-ups to the BIA and to the Manufacturers Council. We recommend a phased approach, and staff is looking at from updating existing fees and only those directly related to the new construction, which would be the first phase. Included in this recommendation would be the increased fee for weed abatement. It was not included in our Maximus study, but we do believe that as we calculated our costs, we would recommend an increase to $214 from the existing charge of $114. That would accurately reflect the cost of providing those services. The second phase would come later. That would include the annual inspections and permitting, but at this time, staff only recommends that we increase or look at the fee structure for new development. We have some sample project calculations for you. These are embedded in the report. These are just a listing of a few of those, and we can see that the difference between the current and proposed fees. Again, these have not been updated since 1992-93. Basically, that's our presentation. You have the packet in front of you. I would be prepared to answer any questions, and we have a consulting firm here as well.
Are there any questions or comments?
Yes.
Mr. Martin?
You mentioned that you used several areas to compare the costs. What areas are those?
That was San Joaquin County and the city of Modesto.
Modesto and San Joaquin County. Thank you.
We looked at a county, we looked at a city, and in many areas we are significantly less than those two jurisdictions. But they use a little different methodology in their calculation. Some of those use evaluation, so that explains the difference.
Fine.
Which is cost of providing service.
Thank you.
My only comment is that it's my personal belief we need to look at fees every year and make minor adjustments than do them every long term with major adjustments. So I would strongly recommend that.
We will be back next year.
Any other questions before I open the public hearing?
I just had one, Mr. Chairman. The charge for weed abatement, I'm not sure how you're charging for that. When you get a complaint, is that when you charge? I can see how you can charge fees for spray booths and permits and firework displays, but I'm not certain on how you're charging for weed abatement.
As you look at the weed abatement issue in Stanislaus County and the unincorporated area, the authority having jurisdiction is the local fire agency. That is the fire chief within that fire district. If they determine that that is a fire hazard, a weed abatement issue is a fire hazard, it is their obligation to make that determination and post. Once they've posted, if there's not compliance within 10 working days, they can refer it to our office, and our office would then go out and do force clean and lien the property. There's where we'd implement those fees to cover the cost of us providing that service.
Okay, so it comes from posting after it's posted and it's not taken care of. The weed abatement certainly is a problem in my area. We've had several places this last year where there was a real problem, even that one next to the Fairview School, which you had to send out three different fire departments to burn that off. So I was just wondering what generated the charge. I understand that now.
Yeah, that would be the cost of us mitigating that hazard.
Okay. At this time, I'm going to open the public hearing. Anybody wish to comment on the fire prevention fees? See, nobody will close the public hearing. Bring it back to the board. Is there a motion to adopt?
Also move, I echo your comments that let's review this on a regular short-term basis.
A motion by Supervisor Grover.
A second.
Second by Supervisor DeMartini. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed? Passes 5-0. Thank you. Item B4. Mr. Newton. Sir, this is your agenda item here. We'll hear from staff first, and then we'll take any comments that you have.
Supervisor, Code Enforcement Unit, San Foss County Department of Environmental Resources. This particular property at 1347 North Carpenter has been an eyesore in the county since I've worked here in 2001. We have dealt with it on a housing issue. It comes a complaint base by people who have lived there over the years. And we had last year brought to an action that this board heard where Mr. Singh was ordered to obtain a demolition permit and demolish one of the structures on this property. This particular property has, if you could turn on the screen, this particular property located in North Carpenter has three homes on it. This one is a cinder block, and that's the way it looks today. The one in the back that's partially demolished, the picture was taken in January, I believe, of this year, was the one that was ordered for Mr. Singh to demolish in 2006, early 2006. And this is the way he left it. We met with him repeatedly, asked him to do it. He repeatedly promised. He brought in a contractor, repeatedly promised. Nothing happened. That's the way it continued. There is behind what's left there, the door is a basement, and for some reason he's left all this garbage and so on at that time. Behind the cinder block house is another structure. There's a converted, I don't know, shed of some sort that he has rented out as late as 2003, I believe, that we have had to order as a part of our duty is not to rent it out anymore because it doesn't meet state standards, the Uniform Housing Code. The structure's still there, disposed, been there since 2001. The electrical, unfortunately, because the property is not habitable and it doesn't meet Uniform Building Code standards for human habitation, Mr. Singh has, on a number of occasions, fixed some of the electrical. The electrical has been signed off, but he's not been able to rent the building or the two structures because they don't meet the standard for habitation. So the people, as you can see, people have come through there and removed all the wire, which is another problem that we have throughout. This is the front of the cinder block building, the way it still looks. We've posted all these structures unsafe to occupy. We've noticed Mr. Singh, this is left on his house. He's difficult to get a hold of. And I understand that he has other jobs. In March, this is the way it looked. February 1st of this year, we issued him a notice in order to abate, to remove this and all the junk and debris, to obtain a building permit, to board the two structures that are remaining, the cinder block and the house behind the cinder block. That was a part of our notice to remove all the excess junk and to put up a fence. The house boarding would require a building permit, and that's good for 6 months. And in that 6 month period, Mr. Singh would be required to say what he's going to do with those structures with a 6 month extension. And he has not obtained that yet. He was also told to fence this property to keep people from going onto it, remove the weeds. April of this year, this is the way it still looked. This was taken to the Nuisance Abatement Hearing Board on April 26th. The Nuisance Board found this property again to be a nuisance, and that Mr. Singh needed to board the houses per county specifications, fence the property per county specifications, and finish removing the rest of the structure, which, as you see on February 26th, he finally did after a number of citations we issued him. In the back of the property here, of this house, he finally filled in with some clean fill the basement that was there. Since then, that's all I have. Since then, Mr. Singh has removed the remaining portions of the house that was ordered to be demolished.
He has yet to obtain a building permit. He has fenced the property off, but has not put up no trespassing signs, which is also required as a part of the county ordinance. There's still an excessive amount of debris and junk on the property and weeds. He has completely fenced the entire property, so the two homes that are remaining on the property won't suffer any more damage, hopefully, and the graffiti that's on it will no longer be an issue. That's all I have.
By us taking action today, what are we doing?
The action today would be is that he has to still, on the fencing, he has to mark no trespassing. He has to place those around the place, the property. He's got to obtain a building permit to board the houses that remain on there by county specifications and finish removing the junk and debris. He has, as I said, finally removed the house at, in 2002 or 2001, I believe, the wood structure that you noticed that was partially there removed. Was ordered removed by our building department in 2002. So we're finally at one point, that's where we're at.
And if I read this right, he has 2 weeks to follow all the things that you just mentioned.
Yes, sir.
Okay. Are there any questions, Mr. Newton? Ma'am, did you want to address the board?
Yes, sir. Good morning, everybody. My name is Pramila Paul, and we own the property on 1345. I'm here to tell you that, sir, we have tried our best to comply with the rules. We tried to fix up the property. The one Mr. Newton showed, the back property where the fuse box was. Over there, we mounted a brand new fuse box with the fuses, everything. We even put in a brand new water cooler over there, swamp cooler, because we wanted to get it ready and get it inspected. But our bad luck, some hawkers came here in there. They took out the wiring in the loft, and then they pulled out the water cooler. They even pulled out the fuse box. So that is why the hole is there, and it looks as though it's abandoned. What I want to know is that, sir, what can we do to keep the hawkers away? Today we have fenced up everything. That's how we were doing before even. We called the police for the help. Sometimes they helped us. Sometimes they told us to the extent saying, why don't you sell the property? We have bought the property as an investment. We have bought the property to look nice and everything. We have boarded, right now where we stand is, we have boarded up both the properties. The one at the back has always been, since we bought the property, it was a two-bedroom house. It's not a shed. The garage is the shed there. The front house, it's habitable, but because of the situation to the next door house, we didn't rent it out, we have boarded it up. Today we had Mr. Todd come in, he checked it out and he said, we weren't aware of the meeting today, we thought it's like last week, it was at 5, we were just not going to come to the meeting, we were going to be absent and you were going to make the decision. We have been told that we need to fence it up. The fencing is okay, but the part which is at the back even, I don't know what to do about it. The next door property is fencing is there up to where the next door fencing is, our fence is up to there. But they're saying even the part which is deep down, we got to go to fence that up. I don't know what I should do. Can you tell me, sir?
Mr. Newton has some specific things that have to be done.
Well, there are two. That's correct. You have to put a cyclone fence around the entire property. Post signs on there of no trespassing. Obtain a building permit to board up the houses at the county specifications, remove the weeds and excessive junk off the property, which I granted you and your husband have done a considerable amount, and that's all you need to do. As a part of that building permit, it's good for 6 months. There's an allowable six-month extension, but in that 12-month period, you need to make renovations sufficient enough for those to be either habited by somebody or removed. And that's your decision. But as it stands, as long as I have been the manager of the unit, none of those structures have been habitable. They've always been substandard, and they've always been uninhabitable. So you just need to fix them. That's all.
What I want to know is the fencing. Do you want us to go right up to the where it goes deep end or where the fence is right now at the back.
The intent of the county ordinance, defense of property, is that the entire property be fenced, and the reasoning behind that is that nobody's going to be living there, that we don't have vandals coming back and creating more of a problem dumping, or somebody start one of the structures on fire, or you have people living in those properties illegally, and that's not what we want.
Because the other property, sir, if you notice, all the three houses which are there, our fence is up to there at the back only. Why do we need to go right to the back? So far, we haven't had any hawkers or
anything. The issue, ma'am, is this, is that it's your property. Your property is a blight on that neighborhood. And the nuisance board has said it's a blight on that neighborhood. We want, and the county ordinance says that you must, and if this board finds that either you will or we will, fence the entire property with a cyclone fence, put up signs saying no trespassing, obtain a building permit, and board up those houses by county specifications.
The last time that the nuisance board decided, we fenced at the front where the public could enter from there. We already fenced all the front, but the back is neighborly this side, and we have very good relationship with the neighbors. They have a fence about up to 4 feet high with the ball wires. Is that acceptable? It's already the both sides, and the back is 4 feet fenced. Already there, and neighbors live this side and this side. Public only could go from the front is already covered.
The ordinance is specific, and unless this board wishes to change it, is the entire property needs to be fenced with cyclone fencing. This property, like I say, as far as I can recall back to 2001, has been a problem, and it is still a problem. And a part of the problem is nobody lives there. And people get on the property, whether it's to your neighbors or right off Carpenter Road, they go on the property. The entire parcel must be fenced, posted, no trespassing.
Okay, so I'd like to, this problem started about 2002, 2001, only the one house we already demolished. The other two houses was the livable. People lived there until 2002. Well, the code enforcement department decided, because until the house is not fixable, we could not let you the other two houses. They was livable, everything was there, people was living there, and they don't let me rent it. They said, hey, they demolished their first house, then we could do it. So after I've been requesting 2005, 6/28/2005, I went to their office, talked to the officer, Pamela Lyle. She said, I don't have problem. You read, you clear everything. You pull up the permit, general inspection. Whatever building department has problem, you fix that. I don't have problem. That's what Pamela Lyle told me. I pull up the permit on 6/28, all four properties, is the copy that I have here. And I think the board of the buildings supervisor, Mr. Dan, came and visited the property. He told me, do the electric wiring up to code, these two houses, and plumbing, and he signed off on July 1st, 05. I have both copies here. He signed off both houses are livable. Everything is okay, up to code. I spent at least about $5,000 on two houses, rewiring, plumbing, everything done. And the MID, they give me the sticker, I gave it to MID, they came and hooked up the electricity. And after that couple months, MID came and disconnected again. Luckily, my son passed by, he called me, I went there. They said, city ordered it to disconnect. I said, why? Everything is approved by the supervisor of the building inspector. I have both copies here. Then I went to their office. The parallel lawyer said, I acceptable this, but my manager, he don't accept this. Then I have personal meeting with them. I show them this sign of everything. I don't know what else I can do. I need help from this town, please.
Okay.
I've been spending money. And Mr. Newton came and checked in there. He painted this building. Is there nobody rent there? Is there cobwebs there? Couple cobwebs. He said that the cobweb is not acceptable to rent it. And I put the new windows on the back house. And he said, you need a permit for the building. I checked with the building permit, and she said, they broke the window, you change that. You don't need a permit, same size.
Okay. It sounds like you've made some tremendous progress. There's a couple last things that you need to comply with of what he went over already. It sounds like you've done a lot of work. There's just a little bit more to go.
I've been doing last 10 years. I don't know what else I could do.
He has already mentioned what else to do, and if you want, right after this, he can go over it with you one more time. There's only a couple
last
last issues.
The nuisance board decided our fence only to the public. Now, today, 9 o'clock, we didn't know we had to come to this meeting. We had an appointment with the, an officer on the site. And new things come up to board with the 4-foot fence all over to the property and the back to the neighbors. The public, we already put 6-foot fence. And the board we agree, but I asked him, can I pull a permit to repair this building? He said, no. I spent another $1,000 to board it. Instead of $1,000, I could help to fix the property. After 3 months, I promise I will come back and prove to you that I could fix all the two properties and garage if they let me pull a permit and maintain instead of boarding. In boarding, you could see the picture is already bored last 3 years. Board there, already there. You could see the pictures already there. And that's my contractor. He did the boarding, everything. Now they said after 3 years, you need a permit to board again and up to the court. I don't know why. It's hard to earn money. I'm a small businessman. I work hard 18, 20 hours for that. And I did boarding, everything. I did fencing to public. They could enter from the front. I did everything, whatever they want to do it. And something always comes up with new things. Now, the house I've been property owned last more than 22 years. Now they said illegally I built up the porch. The porch been here 23, 25 years since I bought it.
All right. Thank you for your comments, and we'll let you know exactly what you need to do.
Thank you, sir. Thank you for your time. Thanks.
Supervisor Grover.
Mr. Singh, your property is a mess. And it's been an embarrassment to the community for a long, long time. We are done. You have 2 weeks to comply. If you have questions on what it takes, Todd will come out and explain it to you there. You need to do everything that he tells you because we are finished with this. And I'm going to make a motion that we adopt the decision of the Nuisance Abatement Board to proceed immediately. I'll make that motion.
I have a motion by Supervisor Grover.
Second.
Second by Supervisor DeMartini. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Passes 5-0.
Okay.
You can work with Mike or with Todd as needed to find out specifics. Okay. We now will move to correspondence.
This board has received a letter from the Stanislaus Consolidated Fire Protection District requesting the dry period financing for fiscal year 2007-2008.
Refer to Auditor Controller.
Yes.
This board has received a letter from the Stanislaus County Mayor's requesting support for an application for funding that has been submitted to the Economic Development Bank in the amount of $250,000.
Refer to Chief Executive Officer.
This board has received a claim, received a copy of the Reclamation District 2091 fiscal year 2007-08 budget.
Refer to Auditor Controller.
This board has received a copy of the James Irvine Foundation Expanding Opportunity for the People of California brochure regarding their grant-making principles.
Refer to Chief Executive Office.
This board has received the claims as noted on the agenda.
With knowledge, receive the claims, refer to Chief Executive Office, Risk Management Division. Are there any Board of Supervisor reports? Seeing none, Legislative Fiscal Management Report, Chief Executive Officer.
Yes, I have just a couple items to address before you today. First is health care reform is still moving forward. It is not well defined at this time. Both the Democratic and Republican legislators are looking at different alternatives. So far, we are not aware that anybody has agreed to carry the administration's bill on health reform, so we don't really know what the status is going to be on that. I would also note that SB 215, the negative bailout bill by Denham, SB 217, which is a conflict of interest bill, and SB 424, infrastructure bond funding for Black Rascal Flats, North Timber Creek, have all moved to the appropriations suspense file. We're not anticipating that they'll make it out this year.
This meeting is adjourned.